hospital today, 8, 4 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. The first delegation that will be presenting is from FASET, and then the rest will follow. I'm sure you do have the program in front of you, do you? You are all welcomed in Parliament, and we hope that the proceedings of the day will be good and up to standard. Feel free, relax. Of course, we'll ask questions, but the atmosphere will be as good and as cordial as possible. Over to the first set, and you will introduce the members of the delegation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for giving FASET the opportunity to present our 2008-09 annual report to the committee. If I can introduce our delegation, we have four board members from FASET present with us: Marianne Trollope, Robert Kappa, Witness Mogaswana, and Andrew Carlson. And we have three members from the management team: myself, Cheryl James, Tanya Lee, and Asha Lukou. Hopefully, between the delegation, we'll be able to engage with you and answer any questions that you have for us during the course of the morning. If I can go straight into the presentation, an overview of the presentation this morning. We have sent out texts that included the PowerPoint presentation as well as a commentary on the slides, and hopefully the committee had a chance to peruse those. The presentation will look at a 2008-09 overview, financial information that's contained in our annual report, governance in the annual report, achievements against the National Skills Development Strategy targets, the highlights during the past year, some of the challenges we face, and some of the questions that we would like to pose. If we look at 2008-09 at a glance, I think we can say very emphatically that FASET had another very good year of operations. What we've seen coming in very, very strongly is that the momentum within the CETA and the commitment from all of our stakeholders in the FASET sector is definitely growing. And we're starting to see larger numbers of people committed to the work we're doing and larger numbers of learners coming out the end of the process. And I think that bodes very well for the future. We're also seeing, from a learnership perspective, that the concept of learnership has always been supported in the FASET sector, but it's really been bedded down more and more as we go along. If we look at the 2008-09 year, we had 20 learnerships registered in the FASET scope. We rolled out a new learnership in the debt collecting field, which has had an incredible amount of support from the people in the FASET sector, and we identified the need for two new learnerships. So we're looking at the moment at rolling out a tax learnership and a learnership for the financial market sector. Importantly on learnerships is we're also seeing the commitment of the sector growing to the concept generally, and we're seeing a number of employers in the FASET sector taking on learners from learnerships that don't necessarily fall within the FASET scope. So we've seen people putting learners on in our sector on call center initiatives, management initiatives, and that shows you that the concept is bedded down and that there's definite commitment. We also had over 3,400 new learners who were signed on to FASET learnerships during the year under review, bringing to over 31,000 the total number of learners we've had who have embarked on learnerships over the last 9 years. We've also seen just under 16,000 of those learners complete their learnerships. And we need to remember in the FASET sector that the average length of time it takes a learner to complete a learnership is 3 years. So we have got very long learnerships. We are starting to see people who embarked on those learnerships coming out the other end. We also embark on a number of strategic projects, and it's important to note that over $71 million was allocated to those strategic projects during the year under review, and that money that's allocated in projects is really cash in the bank that is held in trust until the deliverables of those projects are met and we're able to pay out those funds. Moving on. One of the main areas that FACET focuses on is what we call development projects, and you'll see a lot of reference made to them in our annual report. Development projects focus on previously unemployed young people who are new entrants into the sector, and it gives them the opportunity to get the skills to be able to find employment and to continue their studies within the FACET sector. The development projects focus on young people from matric level to postgraduate level, so we try and cover the full spectrum of people who are needed in our sector, and we'll actually hear from one of these young learners later on during our presentation this morning. One of the flagships of FACET over the last 9 years has also been our lifelong learning event, and we believe that it is very important that we also focus on people in our sector who are currently employed, because if we don't keep the skills up to date of those people who are already in employment, we could see standards dropping, and we also would be in a situation where the people who are training young new people coming into the sector wouldn't have the latest information at hand. And that's the purpose of our lifelong learning interventions. We held 9 events right around the country last year. We go to more than 48 cities, so we cover very small places like Dar, Mbatu, we go up to Springbok, as well as all of the big towns. So we try to take the intervention to as many people as we possibly can. And we had more than 11,000 people who attended those events last year. And to date, we have just under 42,000 people who've made use of the lifelong learning opportunities. Then moving on to grants, there are 3 grants that FACET offer. The mandatory grant, which I'm sure the committee is aware of, that's the 50% people get back for submitting a workplace skills plan and annual training report. In the FACET sector, we have more than an 83% participation rate of firms who are paying their levy to FACET, claiming it back through the mandatory grant. We also offer a learnership cash grant, and that grant is offered to small employers in the FACET sector, firms who employ less than 150 people, who take on young black people to give them the opportunity to gain experience through a learnership. And the purpose of the learnership cash grant is to kickstart that youngster in that organization. A lot of the firms use it to buy the infrastructure that's needed so that the learner can get first-class training. Then another grant that we make available to our sector is the Strategic Cash Grant. It's a grant that's claimed predominantly by large organizations. They can claim up to 20% of the levy that they pay to FACET back, and it's really a reward to those organizations for best practice. So organizations who are training to meet their own scarce and critical skills needs, who are also training towards FACET scarce and critical skills, are able to claim this grant back from us when they are committed to training and upskilling their people. Our quality assurance partner model is also a very different model. We've worked very closely with SACRA to develop this model, and it's a model that's based on partnering and twinning. And what we do is we work with the professional bodies in our sector who've been around for a long time and have excellent standards of quality assurance, and we partner with those professional bodies so that we don't duplicate the quality assurance work that is already being done at best practice level in our sector. Twinning is slightly different, where we work with organizations that might not be at the best practice level yet, and by assisting and helping those organizations, we bring them up to the best practice level, and those organizations are then able to become quality assurance partners of FACET. We currently have 5 quality assurance partners, and we admitted a new QAP during the course of the year under the review, which was ACCA, which is the Chartered Certified Accountants. Finally, on communication, the communication channels that FACET uses are predominantly our website and our call center. The sector is very IT literate. Most people are able to access the information they need through the website. The call center is available to young learners. We also do a lot of career exhibitions. We have a special learners publication that we put out quarterly so that we make sure we're getting to all of the young people who'd like to choose this sector as a career choice sector. If we look at press coverage, FACET was mentioned in 139 articles during the course of last year, and the value of that press coverage was 2.9 million rand. So we're very conscious about getting the image of out there of what FACET are doing, particularly when it comes to young people who are on development projects. Not being satisfied that where we are in our level of development, we also conduct an annual customer satisfaction survey, and the results of that customer satisfaction survey during the year under review were also very positive. It also enables us to identify those areas where we can become even better for the stakeholders within the FACET sector. Moving on to the financial information, and the members of the committee who were at the last presentation that we did last month will recognize this information. I think there are just three figures I'd like to point out. I think firstly to note that the expenses as a percentage of the skills development levy income is sitting at 112%. So it means that we are definitely moving money through the CETA very quickly. We often see the negative press that CETAs are sitting on huge amounts of money. I think we've seen that that money is starting to move out very quickly. Also importantly that our admin expenditure was sitting at 9.1% of our levy income, well below the 10% that we're entitled to spend on that line item in terms of the Act. And as I mentioned earlier on, our mandatory grants are sitting at 83.9%. which I think is very positive because it shows the commitment of stakeholders in FACET to planning up front and to reporting on the training that they're doing within the organization. Moving on to governance, I think FACET are really pleased to announce that it's the ninth year in a row that we've had an unqualified audit report. But I think going beyond that, it's very important that our management board is absolutely committed to good corporate governance and are always pushing the boundary on what we need to be doing better. Our management board not only has performance assessments of itself on an annual basis, but we've also extended that to all of the working committees within FACET. We also, during the year under review, conducted an internal audit quality assessment review, one of the first organizations in South Africa to do that. And the outcome was that FACET has met the international standards for the professional practice of internal audit. We were given a full clearance certificate on that internal audit work, and I think that bodes well for the controls that are in the organization. We also have an independent audit committee, which adds great value to the work that FACET does and tries to set best practice standards in terms of governance within public entities. We have a fraud prevention plan in place, which we have to in terms of the legislation, and we've also been running a fraud prevention hotline for the last 4 years. FACET's board also supports the extension of the audit by the Auditor General to include performance information because we believe as a board that it is very important that we are accountable not only for what we spend, but on how we spend it. And we need to become a lot more accountable in terms of the return on investment and the delivery that we're getting from the projects that we're running. And we appreciate the value that the Auditor General is adding to that process, and we look forward to working very closely with them as we define the way in which performance audits are going to be conducted going forward. It's all very well, and what we've spent the last 10, 15 minutes doing is looking at how well FACET's done, what our financial performance is like, and the governance structures that we set up in the CETA. But I think it is more and more often that in presentations of this nature, we tend to focus on the CETA as an organization, and we forget that we are actually here to change learners' lives. And we must always be focused on what we're able to do for the learners. And I'd like to just for 5 or 6 minutes, Chair, share with you the story of one of our learners who's been the recipient of what we've been talking about for the last 10 or 15 minutes.
this is where my life as an article clerk began. This is the Boston station where I landed by bus coming to do my articles and take the work readiness program in Silverton. My name is Rizwa Nyamagaza from Mengobo in the Eastern Cape. I now reside in Pretoria. I came up to Pretoria looking for a job. And in job searching, I saw in one of the newspapers an advert for training accountants. After responding to a newspaper advert by Facet, I enrolled for a work readiness program funded by Facet with Guaranteed Trust in Silverton. This is where everything began. So I was accepted by Guaranteed Trust to do my short course with them in preparation to start with my article. It lasted 4.5 months in the Pretoria Academy. It was actually a work readiness program they offer, which is funded by Facet, a center for finance. So I went on that program for 4.5 months, and then from there I proceeded to do my articles with an accounting firm, Bradford Accountants in Pretoria, where Guaranteed Trust placed me.
Google was part of my group. I was a supervisor, and from the beginning you could see that she had a lot of leadership abilities and skills. Despite the fact that she's a very determined lady, she wants to help other people. She's not just thinking of herself. That's why she writes about her life story. That's why she wants everybody to be as successful as herself.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
How's it going? Do birds fly?
Tell me where you sit.
I sat everywhere. There was my table, somewhere there.
Yeah.
I sat there for my period of the work readiness program, and I went through what you're going through. It prepared me for my articles. I want to tell you, when you get to the actual field of accounting, it's very useful. You get to use your Excel, you know what you're doing. You get to do your bookkeeping, you know what you're doing. Because you need to get the basics before you get to use Pastel. What helped is that I was very cooperative. I had a very positive attitude, determined to complete this program, determined to start with my articles, and now I've completed them. Now, the one thing I want to tell you is that it's not an easy road. It's not rosy, but with a good attitude, with determination to complete, you can make it. Some of the people I started with didn't get to where I got. There's a lot of challenges, there's a lot of temptations along the way. You earn your article clerk salary, and then there's email that's floating in advertising positions, you're $15,000 a month, and you're thinking, yes. You know, it takes discipline to hang in there. Because I'm telling you, I would look at these adverts and then I see, I actually qualify here. I could get this. And now it's all about getting what I tend to get or taking a shortcut. You know, and one thing that kept me grounded was that I kept telling myself, I could take this quick option and settle for less in life. Or I could hang in there, complete my articles, qualify, and set the tone in my life. So I chose to be the one who will set the tone. So just know, this is not a waste of time. After that, I was placed with Brent Water Accountants in St. Cyprian. And that's where the life of being an article clerk began. The company provided me with very good training, a very good work environment. But I also experienced a lot of challenges because of financial constraints. You know, the salary for article clerks is not that much. So it was quite a challenge to have to make ends meet. I so much that I had to change my lifestyle. I had to move from my comfortable bachelor's flat that I stayed in town. So it's my room in one of the old buildings in town where I had to stay, the bathroom facilities, the rest of the people who stayed on the floor. not a nice experience, but it's something I was willing to do so that I can achieve my goal of becoming an accountant. Yeah, after moving from my bachelor flat, I got into a small room. This is the block of flats where I stayed. This is the floor where I lived on. Come, let me show you the door. This is one of the ladies' toilets that we use. Everybody uses them. Everybody that lives on the floor has a key to this ladies' toilet. And then we can't go in without water. I used to get water from this pipe. This is the room where I stayed. I stayed in this room. And I set the bathroom facilities with everybody that stays on the floor. The journey was quite long, quite challenging. There were nights where one had to decide between buying a loaf of bread so that you had something to eat the night before, or having a taxi fare for the following day. Those were the choices I had to make. But I told myself I was going to try hard and get to the finishing point of the journey. This is where I landed the job as an article clerk from the 1st of June 2006. And I'm still with them. I completed my articles on the 31st of May this year. I wouldn't change this place for anything because of the pleasant working environment. Because of my happiness, I set myself goals and I tend to achieve my goals. So this is where I come to work every day.
I think she's a go-getter. I think from where she came and the fact that she decided to do a whole career change and a U-turn in her career and went through hardship to achieve her goal put her way up there for me.
My philosophy is that a road is never too long for a man who knows where he's going. So I kept focused on my goal, that is completing my articles and qualifying as an accountant, and I've endured all the difficulties along the way. I know that when you mention finance, it sounds big, but it's something that you can actually get into and make it work. So it's all about attitude, have a positive attitude, give it your best shot, make sure that you achieve what you're determined to achieve in the field of finance. Realizing my dream keeps me going, because I believe I'm a limit breaker. There were limits on the way, and I fought to make it square. And so my dream is my reason to keep going in the field of accountancy.
Chair, I think Boyiswe's story humbles us all and really makes us proud of the work that we're doing as CETAs. And I think the showcase of Boyiswe is really about the 20,000-30,000 people that we've been able as FACET to help during the course of our 9 years. In professional sectors like FACET sector, the road is a long road. It takes the average person 7 to 10 years to qualify as a professional accountant in the sector. And I think we do everything we can to help young people along that journey to qualifying. And I think our NSBS achievements during the year under review show that. I think if we look at target 1.2, our commitment really starts where we need to make sure that there's information available to people out there in terms of the sector choices that are available to them. And more than 9,800 skills development facilitators were trained in what FACET can offer and what the scarce and critical skills are in our sector. We also see that the number of learners is growing, but more importantly, if you look at 2.8, that the numbers of learners who are completing interventions is also starting to grow, as we see people who started 4, 5, and 6 years ago on those learnerships starting to complete those interventions now. If we look at 4.2, and that's the NSDS indicator that for Boyiswe would fall under, is young people who we're able to give the opportunity to gain experience and find placement. That those learners are also, when they're coming off in our interventions, being able to find jobs in the sector and grow their career opportunities from there. NSDS Indicator 5 is really around quality assurance, where we look at institutes of sectorial excellence. We look at providers of new venture creation qualifications, and we look at the quality of skills development within our sector. And I think FACET is very proud of the work that we've done there The support that we get from employers on our intervention, we saw an employer in that video. SMMEs in our sector who are giving young people the opportunity to come and do their workplace experience training in those small practices and hopefully grow those small practices where they're able to take more and more learners on in the future. So I think our achievements over the past year also speak for themselves. I think the highlights during the year under review is definitely the stakeholder commitment and participation in our sector, from employers to the union movement to learners themselves and our providers. Everybody comes to the party to try and help the crisis that we're facing in skills development. I think the learner's success and the more and more learners we've seen coming out of interventions after 4 or 5 years is definitely a boost, particularly for young learners who are coming behind them. To go back and motivate those young people like Vuyiswa did so that they don't give up along the way. And then obviously good corporate governance, which is a flagship going forward in future. I think when Professor Mervyn King launched the third King report a couple of months ago, he mentioned that future sustainability of any organization is reliant on the tone at the top, the tune in the middle, and the beat of the feet at the bottom. And I think that's what FACES lives by when we're talking about sustainability. The tone definitely comes from our management board. They are committed to skills development and committed to making sure that we spend the money wisely. The tune in the middle is the management team who work at FACES because we really believe in skills development and the difference that we can make. And the beat of the feet at the bottom is our employers and our learners. Because without those learners and the employers giving them support to go on training and to giving them workplace experience as they go through that journey, not only would the CETA not be sustainable going forward, but those organizations themselves would also not be sustainable. Having said that, there are definitely some challenges that we face. The first set of challenges are pipeline challenges, the quality of young people coming out of matric. The high dropout rates that we read about in tertiary institutions are a challenge for the FACES sector. But we do try and find alternative career paths. And there are a number of accounting technician entry routes through the ICB, the Institute for Certified Bookkeepers, through the AAT, the Association of Accounting Technicians, that give people who haven't necessarily completed matric the opportunity to enter the accounting sector. And we support those interventions as well to make sure that people who've made incorrect career choices early in their life are given a second chance to enter the sector. The impact of the recession is obviously being felt by all sectors, and I think the impact that it has on FACES is that it means we might not necessarily have as much money as we had in previous years to support young people like Vuyiswa, who need the support to find professional opportunities in our sector. And then obviously the future skills development landscape, which is a question we are still engaging in. And I think the important aspect of that is not what the landscape is going to look like going forward, but what is the strategy going to be going forward? Because we need to apply our minds to that strategy as early as possible so that as management boards and management teams, we are able to put long-term interventions in place, particularly in professional sectors that have 4 or 5 year lead times before we see the products of those interventions coming out. So I think that's really been 2008 and 9 at a glance. I thank you for the opportunity to present our annual report to you, and if there are any questions, we'll endeavour to answer them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
James.
And we're not going to ask questions now. We will take all the presentations from the 12 sitters, and then questions will follow to all the sitters. Now, the second sitter will be a bank sitter. Are you ready? Okay. Are you registered? Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. This is the delegation for the bank sector. On the extreme left is our chairman, Mr. Eugene Everson. In the middle is our financial manager, Ms. Diana Buota. My name is Max Makubala, and I'll be doing the presentation.
And is the rest of the delegation?
The members of my staff present here. Precious Kosana, you just move from this side to the back. Yeah, down there. Precious Kosana, Madeleine Pelfer, who's a specialist in development programs, and then Sharifa Naika, she's a specialist in the skill development area. Thank you.
Continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. This is our pleasure as Bank Sector to present our 2008 and 2009 annual report and to field any questions that you might have. Could we start? The agenda that I'll follow is as follows. First, we'll give you the Bank Sector mission and guiding principles and values that, that drive us, how we've delivered on the National Skill Development Strategy, the sector strategic imperatives that we followed and that we want to share with you, the alignment of our projects with the skill development of government and ourselves, the viability and relevance of the Bank Sector to our sector and the economy of South Africa, the effective and efficient administrative system that we've had over these years, and I'll share with you financial highlights of our annual report and other highlights in our work. The mission of the Bank Sector, Chairperson, is to support the transformation, that is the to align our sector with the imperatives of government and people development in our sector and our economy, and through partnerships. That is, we work with other people to achieve the objectives our sector has and to enable those stakeholders to advance the national and global position of the broader banking and microfinance industry. The principle that guides the Bank Sector are as follows. We want to accelerate the social transformation of our country through skills development. We believe that this is an opportunity, the only opportunity we have as a country to transform our society and to make it become more sustainable, to leverage the skills levy funds that we get for strategic benefit of the sector and the national skills development strategy, that we owe to ourselves and our sector to remain cost-effective and to co-source all non-core delivery mechanisms to make sure that we use the money that we have efficiently and effectively, to make sure that there is no wastage, to make sure that we continue to uphold principles of good governance in terms of how monies are collected, used, and accounted for in a transparent manner. To continue employing leading-edge technology and best management practices, we continue to measure ourselves with leading management practices. We have employed some leading management strategies like the balanced scorecard to make sure that what we are saying is what we are doing and what we are doing is what is needed by our sector. To conduct research and benchmarking in order to improve the sector's competitiveness through skills research. We believe that if we continue to do the same thing that we've done, we'll possibly achieve what we've achieved in the past. But in order to make sure that we do not remain behind or lag behind, we continue to find out what makes other countries and other sectors and other cities effective. So we continue to make sure that we share information that we have and also trying to find the best in what other people are doing so that we continue to become as the best that we can possibly be. We spend a lot of our time to become a sector for a hub for sector collaboration to where so that the banks themselves share information that is non-competitive to make sure that we get economies of scale in the things that we do. We also spend a lot of time to cooperate with other sitters to make sure that the sitters are not in competition with each other, but make sure that we continue to work as a community to achieve the similar goals that we have. So, for instance, the example would be the Inter-Sitter Summit confidence we held very, very recently. The values that we have. Values are really bringing who we are to what we do. These are things that we guide ourselves by and measure ourselves by. In our 360-degree evaluation, each person from CEO to person who makes tea gets evaluated on an annual basis, on a 360-degree evaluation basis, to make sure that the person lives our values. Those values are celebrating diversity, not only race, but diversity, all other typeness of people. To remain professional in everything that we do and say, to be innovative, to make sure that we continue to find better ways of doing things from ourselves and from other people, that we continue to be a seamless team in addressing customer requirements and demands. To remain customer focused, that the things that we do are only for the customer, that is the learners, and are the employers who pay the levies to our theater. To evidence respect in dealing with all people from top to bottom in everything that we do, in communication, in everything that we do, to make sure that people's respect and integrity is upheld. That we continue to deal with funds in a manner that has integrity, to make sure that we only deal with people who have the same integrity as well. How have we performed in terms of the targets? We have achieved another five out of five in terms of the audit by the Department of Labor this year. And let me show you what have we done. On objective one, which is prioritizing and communicating critical skills for sustainable growth, development, and equity, we've achieved 206% against that objective. We continue a very successful career guidance project, whose aim is to popularize banking as a career choice between students, not only banking and microfinance, to publish a sector skills plan as required. We've scored 206%. Delivering on the national skills strategy, objective two is promoting and accelerating quality training for all in the workplace. Against that, we've scored 246% against the targets that were set by the Department of Labor in terms of the SLA that we signed with the Department of Labor at the beginning of every year. Mandatory grants, which is in terms of the money that's paid over to us, if the employers of them in terms of their workplace or claim are training in terms of what is agreed, 54%, 85% black, 54% female, 4% disabled, and they fulfill that, we pay them back their grant as required by law, and we'll show you what we've achieved in terms of that. That works very, very well. The support of SMEs, and people do not believe that there are SMEs in the banking sector, but the banking sector has microfinance in it. So we support SMEs to believe that, and the banks will be more effective as soon as we increase the reach of the banking services and banking allied services to all in our economy. To continue with ABET program and assist employers for those people who miss the opportunity to be literate in this world that we live in, we've done very well as far as the ABET program. We continue in a lot of places, even far-flung areas of our country, to support ABET programs, and really that really changes people's lives. Learnership for employees, we continue to offer and register. We registered another 10 new learnerships this year. Skills programs, and there's a new skills program that we've registered this year in terms of what is called the junior and middle management, to assist those people who have been in banks for a long time, but who have never been able to pierce through the glass ceiling. So those skills program assist those people to get the credit they require, to get the career mobility they deserve as well. Objective three, promoting employability and sustainable livelihoods through skill development. Against that target, we've scored 170%. So this is where we support non-living paying employers, non-governmental organizations, community-based organizations, and cooperatives through building a better business program. We continue to support people that are not in our sector, believing that a better functioning economy is in the best interest even of banking. Objective 4, assisting designated groups, including new entrants, to participate in accredited work, integrated learning and work-based programs to acquire critical skills to enter the labor market and self-employment. Against that target, we've achieved 168%. These are the niche learnerships for unemployed learners, where we assist people who, even having completed matric, are unable to get work because they have no work experience. So we try and find in those areas like risk areas, customer relations areas, to enable them to get workplace work readiness programs. Lithema and Guyasa are our flagship programs, where we take, Lithema is a matriculant program, where we take people with matric, and for a full year we pay their stipend, and they are given work experience inside banks, and at the end of that period the banks can employ them, they are under no obligation to employ them. Up to now, the average of people who have completed Lithema and got employment inside banks is above 80%. Guyasa is a program where we take unemployed graduates and give them workplace experience. This program has worked very well, and we worked initially with GMIT. Now we're working with OSM, Mill Park Business School. In Guyasa, the program has worked very well in terms that we actually have some employers themselves co-funding, putting money themselves to take additional students other than those that we are paying for. Tusanani Work Readiness Program gives people who have completed but are unable to find work. We cooperate with FACET, the people who presented before us in this project. And this really shows that CETAs do and can cooperate with each other. CEDA Bursaries, this is a non-fee-paying university in Joburg where students get financially-based training, and we give them bursaries, and that's going fairly, fairly, fairly well. We fund 100 bursaries every year, and for up to now, we've now funded about 500 of those students. Bridging program for learners with disabilities, Chairperson, this has been our biggest victory up to date, that we've been fighting to get disabled people into banks, not only blind switchboard operators, but people with all sorts of disabilities, mobility, hearing, and all types, to first give them a bridging program so they can get into both Lithema and Guyasa, and we've done fairly well on that program. The new venture creation program assists people, in the same black people, to form their businesses, to get mentorship with established businesses, to tender for work inside our sector and outside our sector, and so become employers themselves. Objective 5, improving the quality and relevance of provision, in terms of what's name, of skills provision. Against that, we scored 300%. Here is where we've experimented with the first start with provincial centers of excellence. Initially, the centers of excellence we had was the University of Pretoria, where they were training microfinance, people in certificate of microfinance, and also we were supporting the Institute of Bankers, where they were training people that were already working inside banks. We this year started supporting Teachers Resources Center in the Eastern Cape. There's a lot of talk in terms of the struggle we are getting in finding especially black matriculants with a pass in math, accounting, and English. So we could do what other people are doing, curse the darkness, do whatever we want to do, criticize whatever the delivery system, or we could light a candle. We decided to assist teachers by giving them the wherewithal in order to teach better in math, accounts, and English. And these three resource centers are, one is in Lusikisiki, the other one is in Bizana, the other one is in Libode. We've put 4 million in last year, we've put 4 million this year into those skills resource centers. We are hoping that this will improve the throughput of people with the passes in math and in math and accounting who would come into our learnership or even go to other sectors as well. We continue to support the providers who deliver in the new venture creation program because these are outside our sector, to support those providers that bring projects that seem to have a best chance of survival. We are measured in terms of the survival of those businesses 12 months after we funded them. The ones we funded this last year are still continuing up to now. What imperatives did we start this year? We have at the top end of our offering an international executive development program, in which the banks choose the people at their high talent pool, who are ready to go into executive and even board positions, where we give them international experience to work and experience international banking in other countries. We started this with Canada. We are doing it now with Netherlands and the UK. And this is a highly sought-after intervention that the banks are now using as part of their career progression. And these people, most of them have, one of them is already head, sub-head in one of the banks. We continue, we've done a needs analysis in microfinance to find out what, in terms of executive education or training, can we afford microfinance to be more competitive. That needs analysis was we went on tender with it, and the report was completed, and we are currently finalizing a program to assist microfinance managers. We continue with highly successful master's programs, MBAs, and master's programs for people who are currently in employment and executive short courses in South African business schools and universities. We continue with lifelong learning initiatives for people who are currently in employment. We have started this year with doctoral and postdoctoral funding to assist and contribute to the body of knowledge in our sector and people who are teaching the students in BComs and diplomas. I must say that the spread of the universities that we have supported range from the University of Venda, University of Fort Hare, the previous disadvantaged universities. This, I think, will help the throughput of the training in people that will come into our sector in a few years to come. We are currently busy with an information and technology program in terms of to support technician benchmarking with DaVinci, and this is going fairly well. In terms of the Act now, people cannot give financial advice if they are not fit and proper in terms of the Act. So we've done this phase training inside banks, and this has been fairly well received. Unfortunately, like all other sectors of our economy, we are also hit and exposed to the scourge of HIV and AIDS, and employers are given support in terms of assisting current and future employees on the management, the prevention, and how to live longer with the scourge of HIV and AIDS, which is a reality even in our sector. We continue with a very successful junior and middle management program to which I alluded before. To align our future skill development, before they are aware that the Quality Council for Training and Occupation project is a reality, and we are currently with benchmarking and research, and we're currently doing a pilot project for which we are paying for. We continue with research as well and benchmarking. Currently, we are busy with a model that Germany uses in terms of what is called a dual system, where people spend after matric or even before matric, spend 50% of their time doing work and 50% being at school whilst they are being employed. It's a system that has been very successful in Germany. We are busy investigating and researching this to bring it to our sector. We also, in terms of benchmarking, to bring the information, we ran a very successful international conference in terms of the globalization in the future of banking, also to make sure that we are not out of line with understanding what future skills with the banking sector will need if we want to remain competitive in a global village. Viability and the relevance of the bank sector, we continue to look at ourselves critically to make sure that we remain relevant and viable to achieving our mandate. We continue to go out in the market on a year-to-year basis to find out from our customers, people who deal with us and stakeholders to find out whether there is, what can we do to improve our service. Against the customer satisfaction survey, we scored 4.1 out of 5 last year. We continue to communicate and market the things that we do so that people understand the reach of the bank sector and what we could do to help. We continue to develop and advertise the materials and use channels to reach people in all areas of our country using all advertising material available. We use internal publications to make our own people aware in terms of what the market says and what feedback comes from market. In terms of employment equity, that is in terms of whether we live, what we say, in terms of living diversity, of the 31 people that we employ, there are only 3 males, only 4 white people. The rest of the people are assigned designated groups. This is how it looks, and as the same information as I'm depicted in the histogram. To achieve an efficient and effective administrative system in terms of governance, for all the years the state has existed, we've received unqualified audit, and this year has been the same. In terms of administration costs, we only spend 77% of the allowed budget of the 10% that we are allowed, so which means we remain 23% under that. In terms of human resources, we continue with benchmark practices against our staff complement of 27. We have implemented the balanced scorecard to make sure that all the people that work in us have a career, have a discussion in terms of their career, also understand in terms of how their jobs fit in with a bigger picture of the bank sector. In terms of living our values that we spoke to about before, the scoring of the global score that the bank sector has achieved, out of 5, we scored 4. These are the targets that were set for myself at the beginning of the year, and we've achieved all of them 100%. Financial highlights. The 80% levy income increased by 14% from 288 million from the previous financial years, that is 2007 and 2008, to 329 million to the past year. This is both a function of the higher salaries being paid and the higher employment that our sector experienced in that year. 98.9 million was spent on discretionary projects during 2008 and 2009, as opposed to 74.3 million of the 2007 and 2008. Mandatory grant payout percentage was 97%, and we increased it by 1% from the previous year. This is among the highest mandatory grant payouts, which says our employers are fulfilling the requirements, are training, and submitting WSP. The bank sector has allocated 96% of the surplus funds available for discretionary projects at the end of March this year. Financial highlights. This is a summary of the annual report that we've published and we've given everybody, and this is what they are. This is a comparison between the previous year, the audited financial statements from 2007 and 2007-2008 to the current 2008-2009. Skill development levy income increased from 288.929 million to 329.3. Investment income, which is a function of both interest and the amount of money we had over the year on an average basis, increased from 15.2 to 19.8 million. Total revenue, including 80% of the levy income, amount of money we received from National Skills Fund, the investment income, as I referred to before, increased from 334 million to 373.98 million. Total expenses, including admin expenses, NSF expenses, grant and project expenses, that's increased from 304 to 350 million. Net surplus from 29.7 to 23.2, which means the throughput percentage will be a lot more better than we were the previous year. Cash and cash equivalents, 151 reduce that to 161 million. Financial highlights. The total surplus funds allocated, as we said, 528 million. Total surplus funds spent, 411. This is a comparison between from 2006 as we continue to show the growth in our sector and how efficient we've become. And I'm going to give you just two comparison lines. The first one is surplus funds as the first line. From 241 in 2006, we've moved to 241.7 million. Last year it was 547 million point seven. Surplus funds allocated as the second line from 226.9 in 2006. Last year it was 527 million point five. That is, if you take that as a percentage of each of those two numbers I've given you, surplus funds allocated 94% in 2006. We've moved that to 96% this current year. Surplus funds spent, if you look at that, from 2006, that was 163 million point six. This year, that has gone to 411 million point 27. As a percentage, that has grown from 72% to 78%, which shows our ability to use money to remain with as little money at the end as possible to make sure that the projects that we get are the type of projects that we wanted to get, and we the throughput percentage and efficiency rate of the sector continues to improve. Thank you. ECQA, I'm just using that as a highlight because it's a highlight of this year in terms of establishing the QCTO. We've launched the operating model this year to bring new policies, a new template, a new checklist that has started from the 1st of September this year. We have registered the Quality Council Trade and Occupation Curriculum and Qualification for the bank worker occupation. This is the same that we get in other countries. Germany is called a Bankkaufmann qualification. So this is the same thing that we follow what the world is doing in other places. The highlights of the training layoff scheme, Chairperson, given the downturn in the economy, there's been questions and also the options by the Department of Labor that the sitters participate in offering a training layoff scheme to enable people who are facing the retrenchment to be given opportunity rather to be trained rather before they could be retrained. The bank sector is fully committed to participate in the stakeholder forums for the employee training layoff scheme. The commitment exists from the sector to support the sector in collaboration with both Department of Labor and the CCMA. Details with regard to the participation criteria in the scheme have been communicated in our sector. Inquiries have only been received from TEBA and APSA. No formal application to participate have been received from the sector as yet. We remain ready and willing and able to do that as soon as any employer is saying they want to do that. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. We'll proceed to Chita Sita. Are you ready? Please proceed.
Thank
Thank you, Chairperson, and the House at large. We are very honored to be here today. I'll start by introducing the CETA delegation. We are from the chemical sector. On my extreme left, I have my Deputy Chairperson, Mr. Robin Atta. Following Mr. Atta is our Chairperson, Mr. Jacob Mabena. On my immediate left, I have my Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Farhat Motala. And on my extreme right, I have Mr. Trevor Channing, who's the Group Executive for Governance and Support Services, that's including HR, facilities, and all other services. Thank you, Chair. And of course, myself, if you mind me, I'm Kilemukile Dilosoke. I'm the CEO of CETA. Our presentation will focus on the vision and mission of the CETA. We believe that it's a business imperative for the House to understand what our vision and our mission are, strategic objectives of the CETA, the governance structure that drives the CETA. We will give you the profile of the levy-paying companies. We'll proceed to give you the organizational highlights for the year under review. And, of course, we will also touch on the highlights as per the service level agreement with the Department of Labor. We will also dwell on the organizational highlights on learner achievement. We did mention the training law scheme in the previous presentation, so we'll skip that one for today. We will proceed to the financial performance, Chairperson, if you allow me. I will do just a strategic overview of the finances and then hand over to the CFO to proceed. And then we will conclude. Thank you. We are geared to deliver world-class education and training for the chemical industry sector. And our mission is that the CETA contributes to sustainable development through facilitating the provision of the skills for growth in the chemical sector. What are our strategic objectives? What are we about? We prioritize and communicate scarce and critical skills, as you are aware with all the CETAs, for sustainable growth, development, and equity in the chemical industry sector. We actually want to meet and or exceed our stakeholder expectations, as you know that they are our shareholders. We provide a multidimensional knowledge framework for education and training in the chemical sector. And, of course, we always attract, motivate, and retain competent people. Establish and deploy consistent and supportive processes, systems, policies, and procedures, obviously that to support our business. And for business efficiency purposes, we also engage in effective gathering and disbursement of funds for the benefit of the sector. As you know, this is one of the bigger challenges, as my colleagues have mentioned, that CETAs are always challenged in terms of the reserves, that they have financial reserves. But we do actually make sure that to a very large degree we disburse. And of course, we maximize organizational performance and development. Therefore, against that backdrop, the business imperative of the CETA therefore remains to ensure that education, training, and development meet the labor market needs of the chemical sector and that they are aligned with the priorities of redress, access, and transformation, which are the buzzwords in today's world where you have to make sure that your business is aligned to the business of government. There is our governance structure, Chair. We are governed by a CETA governing board, which is which has representatives from both labor and business. The same for other CETAs. We have an EXCO, an executive committee, which is made up of board members and the CEO and members of the management as invited by the CEO. We have functional committees, as mentioned, the audit committee, regional committees that help us to drive our mandate, the joint stakeholder forum, and the discretionary grant review committee. We have the management committee, which is led by the CEO and, of course, constituted by executives. The sector has five chambers, which are petroleum and base chemicals. We have pharmaceuticals and fast-moving consumer goods, which we call FMCG. And we have explosives and fertilizers, specialty chemicals and surface coatings, and we have glass. Those are the chambers that drive the system.
the profile of the lithium companies, as I've already said, we have five chambers, and the five chambers are divided into subdivided into nine subsectors. We have petroleum and base chemicals, we have gas, pharmaceuticals, and fast-moving consumer goods, that's FMCG, surface coatings and specialty chemicals, and fertilizers and explosives. And therefore, those are the sectors and subsectors that actually drive the CETA. If you look at that graph, it shows levy paying companies by chamber, the five chambers that I referred to, as at April 2009 figures. And Chair, I hope that the people can see the different colors as representing the different chambers. We have also reflected on a bar graph levy paying companies by subsector as the April 2009 figures. The light purple shows small companies, the maroon shows medium, and the yellow shows the large companies. Below you can see the nine subsectors, and above you can see the number of companies as reflected. That's our levy paying companies as of April 2009. What are the organizational highlights for the CETA for the year under review? We actually registered an unqualified audit once more by the Auditor General, and of course it's worth mentioning that it's for 8 consecutive years. We have received the SAQA Green status. As you know, the South African Qualifications Authority does have business with CETA, and they actually have standards that we have to meet. And for us, it is a business imperative to highlight this one. And we have consistently received the Green status. We have received an award from the South African Society for Cooperative Education, and it was at an international conference where I had an opportunity to address the international audience, and we are very proud of the fact that we have received this award during the year under review. Organizational highlights continue. As we know in the country, and you know, in terms of the math and science performance, having looked at, you know, like the third international mathematics science study, the TEMS report that has been done, the HRC's report, and all other reports undertaken in a research sense, one feels that the CETA has to be responsive in terms of supporting math and science achievers, not forgetting the young ones, one looking at the types of questions that were asked in the previous presentation. But we focused last year on supporting math and science achievers, because sometimes you find that these kids do achieve, but they are just out there without any support. And I'm proud to say that some of those math and science achievers that we gave, we call them university starter packs, did make it to the bursary scheme that I will talk to later. We awarded 1 million rand in bursaries to 51 students, addressing the needs of the chemical industry, and of course directed by our scarce and critical skills list. And in the annual report, you will find the reflection and the spread in terms of provinces. I must say that one of the provinces where we're disappointed is the Northern Cape, where not a single student received a bursary, and we are working on a strategy to find ways of understanding why there's no uptake, but also how we can support all the provinces, awareness raising in terms of how children can do the uptake, especially in the next round that will be soon. And of course, we also maintained our SABS, South African Bureau of Standards, ISO 9001:2000 certificate of recognition, which speaks to our quality management system within the CETA that drives our business. The CETA has confirmed by the Auditor General in the annual report to comply with the legislation relating to governance matters and adopted and applied good governance practices throughout the year, as reported to the Auditor General by the Auditor General on page 53 of the CETA annual report. We have proceeded and continued to blaze the trail in terms of our DOL SLA targets. We didn't mention all the targets here, Chairperson. They're all captured in the annual report. However, we just highlighted those where we feel that we have performed very, very well. For instance, the number of persons who carry out skills development facilitation, the use of the guide, the skills development guide, 160%, target exceeded. the number of life cents that received WFP HR grants for 08-09 financial year exceeded also 112%. Number of small levy paying companies supported by the CETA for 08-09, 361%. Number of water villages registered are at level 1 to 4 exceeded, and you see the note there, two of the targets were exceeded actually previously. And then the number of workers that have registered, number of workers that have entered learning programs, 143%. Number of organizations supported by the CETA, that is NGOs, CBOs, and co-ops, et cetera, exceeded. There's a note there, and the number of unemployed people that entered learning programs, 302%. Okay. We have captured learner achievements, employed versus unemployed learners. As you can see, the light bluish color represents 844 who are unemployed, and employed learners 699, a total of 2,543. So the number of learners is on the upper axis, and on the horizontal axis you have the unemployed versus unemployed learners. We have also captured, and we thought it's an imperative that we highlight these according to provinces. And as you can see, Gauteng has the highest number of learner achievements, followed by 708, which is Mpumalanga. Yes, Mpumalanga. And then the rest of the provinces are highlighted in the various areas. In terms of our financial statements, Chairperson, as I said, I'm just going to give the overview. Our annual financial statements and audit results for 2008, that will be covered by the CFO. Also, he will also go through the CETA financial highlights for 08-09, top of the range being the unqualified audit report, and of course, our governance bill of health given by the AG, and of course, corporate governance and expenditure management. And at this point, Chairperson, with your permission, I want to hand over to the CFO to address you.
Thank you, Madam CEO. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'll quickly go through the major highlights. The first achievement, once again, we've achieved the unqualified audit report, and this has now been achieved for 8 consecutive years since inception. So a clean bill of health throughout our period of existence. We also achieved a very staggering increase in levy income during the year of 26.3%, and this was quite phenomenal in terms of the despite the economic crisis in the country. Grant expenses accounted for 73% of grant levy income. Over the entire period since inception, we've achieved average of around 79% of grant levy income, grant expense disbursement. Over the next slide, this is just the distribution of levy income over the 9-year period, and what we can see clearly is that the upward trend in levy income over the years, and the sharp rise over the years, which can be seen throughout the entire period, which is really a great achievement and shows that a large number of member companies have come into the CETA and the levy income has compounded quite substantially. Over the page, the next slide just shows a distribution of the SDL levy income received for grants, as well as the employer grant and project expenses for each of the financial years. And the bottom line shows the grant and project expenditure percentage. As you can see, over the entire period, the expenditure on grants has been substantially high. And as I mentioned, the average of 80%, 79.7% achieved throughout the entire period, which is really a great achievement. For the financial year, total revenue increased by 31% from 221 million in 2008 to 291 million for the financial year in 2009. Total expenses as a percentage of revenue was at 71%. Admin income, very importantly, was well within the 10% limit, and there was for the current year We achieved a 1.8 million saving in admin. Over the 9-year period, we actually achieved a saving of about 23 million, which was transferred to the discretionary reserve for the purpose of skills training. Very importantly, our consultancy and outsourcing expenditure budget at 0.5% of expenses, extremely low, representing just 0.5 or 500,000 of a total expenditure of 290 million. This graph basically represents the administration income against expenditure, and as mentioned previously, you can see that over the entire period, we've made substantial savings in admin, which has all been transferred back to the discretionary reserve for skills development in the sector. Just to touch quickly on the area of corporate governance and expenditure management, the CHITA has a very strong audit committee which exercises the financial oversight over financial management, risk, and internal audit. We have an extremely well-established secretariat and executive management structure, as the CEO has previously pointed out in the organogram. We carry out annual PFMA compliance reviews and governance reviews, and throughout the entire period, it's quite amazing that there has been no non-compliance identified for the entire period. The DRL has also confirmed it in terms of their scorecard, and the CHITA has consistently achieved 100% of 5 out of 5 in this area for the entire period. All reports and submissions required in terms of the PFMA legislated have been submitted timely with requisite quality. We have extremely effective and efficient transparent systems of financial risk management and controls, and in the annual report we've expanded on that quite substantially if you read through the financial narrative. This graph basically shows the registered and levy paying companies, and as you can see, as explained previously, the number of companies have almost doubled since inception, over 100% increase, and this has also can be clearly shown in the levy income that we receive, which has tremendously increased over the years. Thank you.
Let me conclude, Chair, by mentioning one more highlight that I actually forgot. It's captured in the annual report. We participated as a CHITA in a leadership in oil and energy program in partnership with the South African Petroleum Industry Association. And that program has actually seen more than 150 employees in that sector graduating. And that we do in partnership with the VIST Business Group. And the directive of the board at this point is that this benchmark should be spread to the other 9 subsectors through the MOUs that have been entered into. And with that, it's all from us, the Avantgarde of Skills Development. We say thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next speaker is
good morning, Madam Chair. From the Council of the CTSL CETA, the staff and all its stakeholders, we'd like to thank the LPC for giving us this opportunity to present the annual report for the last financial year for 2008 and 2009. Just a brief introduction of personnel from the CTSL CETA. My name is PK Naika. I'm the CEO of the CETA. With me, I've got other members in the delegation that will include the chairperson of the CTSL CETA Council, Mr. Franz Barnard. I've got the the deputy chair of the CTSL CETA Council, that is Ms. Rani Naidu. I've got staff members, senior staff members and management that are present with me today that will include the Chief Financial Officer, Gina Lazell, and Almin Bowman, who is our Communications and Marketing Manager. Thank you. Now, to go into the report proper, I must apologize for not following the format of the other CETAs. I will In terms of the presentation, we follow the format of the annual report as it is in the report itself. In terms of the vision, the mission, and the broader mandate of the CTSL CETA, basically our objective and our aim is to become the leading sector in skills development in South Africa and thereby create a highly skilled workforce that will contribute to workplace security, increase business viability and employment growth in the country. And in terms of our resources, both financial and human resources, we dedicate ourselves to that kind of a vision and mission for the CTSL sector. Just to give you a broad overview of the profile of the sector, basically it constitutes clothing, textiles, footwear and leather, and also general goods. When we look at the clothing sector, in terms of our client providers, these are manufacturers of all types of apparel, including outerwear, underwear, men's, ladies, and children's clothing, protective gear, and all other accessories that goes with clothing. In terms of the textile sector, our companies are manufacturers of all types of textiles made from natural or synthetic fibers for use in apparel, home textiles, upholstery, and industrial applications. In the footwear and leather sector, we are manufacturers of leather for use in the manufacture of footwear and apparel and general goods, manufacturers of footwear from leather and or textiles, or manufacturers of general goods such as handbags, luggage, car seats from leather and or textiles. Now, these are the companies that will form under the demarcation for the CTSL sector. The number of levy-paying firms in the CTSL sector, they number 1,191. You'll notice that in terms of the, this also dictates the total levy income for the sector. So we're not a sector with a very huge skills levy income. We most probably are the second smallest CETA, okay, within the CETA landscape. We have about 199 large firms that contribute, and they contribute 17% of the levy income. We've got about 237 medium firms. Okay, and these medium firms are, they have employees that range between 50 to 149, and they contribute 20% of the skills levy income. And then we've got a large number of small firms, 755, and they contribute 63% of the skills levy income. In terms of levy income per size category, 60% of our levy income comes from the larger firms, 18% of the levy income comes from medium firms, and 20% of that levy income comes from the small firms. Just briefly to allude to the chairperson's report, the chairperson during the reporting period reported on the new projects and programs, more especially on the alignment of the current CTSL qualifications with new QCTO requirements. And for that, I think he also makes reference to a QCTO qualifications project in which we are addressing 17 to 20 occupations within the sector. So in terms of the development for QCTO qualifications, we are one of the leading CETAs in terms of the number of occupations that we are addressing at one time. And the project amount was at around 350,000 that we have dedicated to that project. In terms of the new FET model for learnership provisioning, I think the sector found that in at the end of 2007 that there were many providers that didn't comply with the registration requirements as laid down by the Department of Education for further education and training. We have engaged, the CTFL CETA put a delegation together, and we had to engage with the Department of Education in order to establish a model that will make most of our constituent providers comply with national legislation in terms of the FET Act of 1998 and also with its amendments in 2006 and its accompanying regulations. So what we did, we established what was known as the FET model, and I will give you details of that model a little later on in terms of the ETQA manager's report. I think a significant achievement for the sector was the scholarships for textile master's students at the Technical University of Liberec in the Czech Republic. We are one of the few CETAs that have got international strategic partnerships with leading universities, textile universities overseas. And this project was also co-funded by the Office of the Deputy President and GIPSA. I'm proud to announce that by July next year, 10 of these students will be returning to the country to add value to education and training in the textile industry. And all students, 9 of the 10 students were black students that went on this program. In terms of recognition of best practice in skills development, I can report to you that 3 of our providers were received national awards in terms of best practice for skills development and in terms of the provisioning and also for employment of 18-2 learners and also in terms of the way they complied with all other criteria for best practice in skills development. In keeping with the political slogan, you strike a woman, obviously you strike a rock, I can tell you that we were one of the few CETA to recognize women in terms of our Women in Leadership Conference in the 3 major regions. Given the context of the CTFO sector and the fact that we are one of the biggest employers of women, we were proud to recognize women within our sector. I think that the chairperson also reports on certain strategic discussions that we have had with government departments, and more especially, it looks at the customized sector program for clothing and textiles. We are really looking forward to the implementation of the skills development project plan that we have with the Department of Trade and Industry, and I can tell you that the discussions are really at an advanced stage. The CTFL CETA is really looking forward to now implementation of that skills development project plan. Given the challenges of the sector in terms of human and financial resources and looking at our viability and our sustainability going forward, we decided to adopt a very proactive approach in terms of the way we reestablish ourselves. Although we have decided to put in an independent application for reestablishment, we also are very realistic and we have decided that, or the stakeholders within the sector have decided that we should also look at other strategic CETAs that we could look at in terms of a pipeline approach in order, with a view to incorporation. So we've also started those discussions with the wholesale and retail CETA. We are still very at an early stage in terms of our discussion with regards to incorporation. In terms of my report that's contained in the annual report, I can report that there are massive demands for upskilling of the workforce within the clothing, textile, footwear, and leather sector. Year on year, our funding windows for discretionary grant funding is oversubscribed by between 300% to 400%. Unfortunately, given our limited financial resources, that we are unable to meet this demand. I also report on the implementation of the FET Amendment Act 2006 in order to ensure that the skills development providers or the companies are not compromised in terms of national legislation. I've already alluded to the fact that we put in a new FET model where we partner with sites where HDPIs, which we call HDPIs, these are host training provider institutions. We have created 5 private FET colleges within the sector that will be able to partner with sites of learning that do not meet the stringent registration criteria and requirements of the Department of Education in order to broaden the base for learnership delivery within the CTFL sector. Over and above that, we've got 36 workplace training provider institutions. That these are companies that will also have subsidiary companies as their sites of learning that have registered with the Department of Education as private FET colleges. So all these providers now comply in terms of national legislation, in terms of the way they deliver on full FET qualifications within the sector. In terms of the last financial year, I could report that we have allocated 922 learnership grants, okay, to companies to the tune of 18 million rand, and I've already indicated that obviously these are not sufficient to meet the skills development demands within the sector. In order to meet the demands within the sector, we need to double the learnership allocation to at around 2,000 or even maybe up to 4,000, 5,000 learnership grants as alluded to in the customized sector program for clothing and textiles. A remarkable achievement for the sector was the CTFL CETA EDQA was reaccredited until September 2011, but I will take more discussion on that when I come to the EDQA manager's report. Another significant contribution during the last financial reporting period was that we've managed to get national qualifications for sewing machine mechanics at NQF level 3 and NQF level 4 that were registered with SAQWA. I mean, for the first time that we have an NQF-aligned credit-bearing program for sewing machine mechanics, and we know that there's a huge demand for this type of an occupation, a qualification within the sector. Some of the highlights of the period under review, once again, the three CTFL firms recognized for good practices, the joint project with the Deputy President's Office and GIPSA in terms of our overseas partnership with the Technical University of Liberec, the Women in Leadership Conference, the project, I think for the first time that this morning you'd hear one of the CETAs reporting on us delivering in terms of the disabled mandate within skills, disabled mandate within the skills development legislation. We have developed a project to develop sewing skills and construction techniques for disabled learners in a sheltered employment, which was referred to as the S.A. Lewis project, which was successfully run. I think it was about 18 learners qualified under this program for and were certificated for the skills program for joint component parts for clothing. We view the trade union as a very important stakeholder and a very important partner in skills development, and they were accorded various projects, for example, the very successful Cape Town Fashion Festival, HIV-AIDS awareness. Also, we have projects for HIV-AIDS awareness training in terms of training intervention in the sector, and we are very much conscious of the fact that given the socioeconomic circumstances that most of our workforce live on, that this is a very important training intervention. We're also trying to conclude on three research studies, more especially the skills audit, which we have concluded already, the learnership and technology tracer studies, which was very important for making strategic decisions within the sector. I'd just also like to allude to the fact that in terms of our technologists, what we noticed is that most of the technologists that we train very quickly migrate to the retail sector, obviously given their future or their career pathing and career very limited career development within the CTFL sector, so many of them migrate to the retail sector. In terms of the learnership tracer study, I think one of the more important findings was that the CTFL CETA employs up to 85% of unemployed learners within the sector. So those 18 learners that we take on in terms of the learnership program do eventually get employment within the sector. In terms of the BE study, we are currently very busy with the research manager in terms of that study, and we should complete or finalize that study in the next financial year. From the ETQA manager's side, basically alludes to the primary objectives of the ETQA. The ETQA looks at accreditation and monitoring of training providers, the registration of assessors and moderators in the sector, the development and registration of qualifications, unit standards and learnerships, quality assuring provision and certification of all CTFL qualifications, maintaining a national learner database as per SAQWA and the NRD requirements, which is the National Learner Database requirements. You also make mention of the AFET model that we have introduced within the sector. The CTFL CETA has registered 140 employed and 377 unemployed learners on learnerships for the last financial year. 245 employed and 455 unemployed learners successfully completed learnerships and received certificates within the sector. The CTFL CETA registered 23 textile apprentices in terms of its artisan development program within the sector. I can also proudly announce that in terms of our targets or for the indicator for learnerships, we have exceeded the targets within the first 2 years of NSDS 2, which is indeed a significant achievement. In terms of the advisory committees of the ETQA has two advisory committees, which is the ETQA committee and the apprenticeship committee, that advises and makes recommendations to council in terms of consultation, collaboration, and input. Other matters that were addressed by the ETQA related to, obviously, announcements of our management information system, the progress made towards registration of assessors and moderators. We have had four ETK workshops that were held during the period under review, the new qualification registered with SAQWA, more especially for sewing machine mechanics, okay? The new and revised learnerships, we have up to 52 registered learnerships that are registered with the Department of Labor, but we have revised 50 of them against our NQF Level 2 qualification alone. And we are very proud that the results of the ETK audits conducted at all CTFL accredited training providers. In terms of monitoring of those providers, I can tell you that the CTFL CETA has achieved best practice in terms of way we monitor education and training provision within the sector by SAQWA. A comprehensive audit was undertaken by SAQWA during the period under review in May 2008. CTFL ETQA passed with minor non-compliances. We have achieved a final score of 1.9 out of 3, placing us amongst one of the top 5 ETQAs amongst all ETQAs in the CETA landscape. The CTFL CETA ETQA was re-accredited until 26 September 2011. Very quickly, in terms of the NSTS2 targets, the National Skill Development targets versus performance, in the annual report, it was obviously the achievements against NSTS2 targets set out in the service level agreement with the Department of Labor is reported on. A number of interventions have been undertaken during the year to address targets and other sector skills priorities, and these included the mandatory grants dispersed to firms that submitted workplace skills plans and annual training report. CTFL CETA bursary and grant schemes for employed learners, including all our training interventions and funding windows for ABET, LL Basic Education and Training, Management Development Technologist Training, Learnerships, and Critical Scarce Skills Programs. We noticed that there's a huge demand for technical training within the industry. With some of the technical programs, we struggle to meet some of our targets, but in terms of all other indicators and targets, we have satisfactorily satisfied the requirement. In terms of adult basic education and training, I can report that the challenges that exist within the CTFL sector is no different than those challenges that are experienced by the National Education Department or other industrial sectors. Grants for unemployed learners, technology students, and students undergoing work experience, that was also reported on. We satisfy those requirements quite satisfactorily. The sector project implemented in partnership with other organizations such as new venture creation programs, training of disabled learners in sheltered employment, HIV/AIDS awareness programs, Cape Town Fashion Festival, Women in Leadership. Those are some of the projects that we've instituted in the last financial year. The report included actual versus targets, budgets versus actual expenditure, and reports for variances. But I can confirm and stress that given our limited financial resources, the CTFL CETA has performed satisfactorily. In terms of the report from the CFO, Ms. Gina Lazel, in terms of income, skills development levy income increased by 3% from the previous year to 61.8 million, which is 62 million. I can report that although we project in terms of our budget a 6% increase in terms of skills development levy income, the number of company closures, etc., have impacted on the total revenue of the CETA. Additional revenue included about penalties and interest, investment income of about 5.8 million, funding of 1.2 million that we received with a strategic partner in terms of the KZN DED, okay, that funded the CTFL CETA and the KZN DED in collaboration with the Technical University in the Czech Republic. In terms of expenditure, administration expenditure increased by 10% from the previous financial year, but we did not exceed the 10% levy income received. Mandatory grant payments amounted to 80% of the total mandatory levy income. Discretionary grant expenses amounted to 21.5 million, which included the 1.2 million received from KZN DED. Although this was 9% more than the previous year, it was still lower than anticipated, mainly due to a delay in learnership payments to firms as a result of changes in the legislation, which required the CETA, obviously, learnership training providers to be registered with the UMALUSI and Department of Education. It was because of tranche payments in terms of learnership provisioning and payment of grants towards learnership, ABET, and management programs in tranches, okay? That is the second point. The CTFL CETA has committed 36.6 million of discretionary reserves to approved projects and grants, and 4.1 million has been ring fenced for future projects. So the total funds of 40.7 million should be spent, that's what we're projecting, should be spent in the next financial year. I can tell you that the CTFL CETA has very stringent controls in place in terms of the internal audit committee. The audit committee met four times during the period under review and conducted its first compliance with the audit committee charter. The audit committee deemed the internal controls applied by the CTFL CETA over financial and risk management effective, efficient, and transparent. Regular internal audits were conducted and no matters were reported that indicate any material deficiencies in the system of internal control. I can also confirm that, like the other CETAs that have reported this morning, that since inception, the CETA has received unqualified audit reports. The audit committee reviewed the audited annual financial statements, the auditor general's management report, and the CETA's compliance with legal and regulatory provisions and concurred with the AG's report. The audit committee was satisfied with the effectiveness of the internal audit function and believed that it had addressed the risk pertinent to the CTFL CETA in its audits. The report from the Auditor General. The Auditor General submitted an unqualified audit opinion to the Parliament on the financial statements and performance information of the CTFL CETA for the year ended 31st March 2009. And without qualifying its opinion, the Auditor General just drew attention to two matters. One related to the relicensing, okay, which for the risk. The CTFL CETA has applied for a renewal of its certificate of re-establishment, and there was just one minor non-compliance and related to legislation. CTFL CETA has not obtained approval from National Treasury before a new bank account was opened. So it was not a significant non-compliance. The Auditor General found the overall governance framework of the CTFL CETA to be adequate. Auditor General stated that the evidence obtained was sufficient and appropriate to report that no significant findings have been identified as a result of the review. So thanks to our counsel and good corporate governance, year on year we have received unqualified audit opinions. In terms of its statement of responsibility, the annual report included a statement of responsibility by the CTFL CETA Council, and it's generic that we, year on year, that would be reported on. The Council deemed the CTFL CETA a going concern in the financial year and has applied for the renewal of its license at the end of March 2010. The Council was not aware of any matters arising since the end of the financial year that would have a significant effect on the operations or financial position of the CTFL CETA. We have a similar report from the Accounting Authority of the CTFL CETA, once again. The report of the Accounting Authority of the CTFL CETA details the legislative framework to which the CTFL CETA has been established and by way in which it is governed. The general review of the state of financial affairs with specific reference to the nature of the CETA's income, expenditure, and terms of admin and services rendered by the CTFL CETA aligned with objectives developed by stakeholders. The report addressed capacity constraints, and that is because obviously of staff turnover experienced as a result of staff vacancies during 2008-2009. The CTFL CETA Council supports the principles of good corporate governance, and the report details the role of the CTFL CETA Council in ensuring that the CETA staff, council, and committee members operates within a clear policy framework and in line with its constitution and code of conduct. Emphasis is placed on compliance with relevant legislation, risk management, fraud prevention, and internal audits, so there's a huge focus in that in terms of good corporate governance. The report described the composition and mandate of the CTFL Council and its committees. The report noted the constituency representatives served on the CETA governance structures without receiving any kind of remuneration. It was only the chairperson of the audit committee and individual audit committee members who are retired, okay, that have received amounts, and this was also referenced in the table, and it is in the annual report. It was further noted that the council committee members were reimbursed for instances where they made their own travel accommodation arrangements to attend CETA meetings, and generally council members do not receive any kind of remuneration for attendance of meetings besides SNT. The remuneration of the two senior managers of the CTFL CETA is mentioned in the human resource report. Mention was also made of payments made to consultants for services such as payroll administration and audit consulting. The Accounting Authority report further addressed issues, and this is generic, safety, health and environment, social investment, prioritization and spending, and human capital development, which alluded to employment equity and training of staff. The authority report briefly reflected on discontinued activities, new proposed activities, and performance against NSDS targets, and reiterated the application made for reestablishment. As is generic to all annual financial statements, those are the annexures that you will find in your annual report, which I will not talk to. And that completes my presentation on the annual report for the CTFL CETA. I would like to thank you for giving us this opportunity to do this presentation. Thank you very much. We will take questions if there are any.
Thank you to all the speakers for the report given to the committee. We are going to take questions to all four speakers. So all the speakers that are here, all four speakers, must be very attentive when the members are asking, because we are not going to take CETA by CETA. The questions, members will just ask questions, so you just take your questions from the members' questions. Members, it's over to you. Members, Honorable
good morning, everyone. I've got one question for Bank Setter, that is delivering of the National Skill Development Strategy. In the delivering National Skill Development Strategy, support of providers to deliver the new venture creation program. My question is that I've only heard that they are providing these services to, they've only mentioned the Eastern Cape province. So I just want to know what is their plan to stretch out this new venture creation program to all other provinces, since you have mentioned only one. Do you have any future plans of rolling out or of stretching out this creation program to other provinces? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Kumalo.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. My question is partly linked to what has been asked by my colleague to say, is it there any extension in future to other provinces? But linked to that is the question of the presenter made mention that there are stakeholders that are partnering with. We would like to know which are those stakeholders. Because during the presentation, I never heard a mention of those stakeholders. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kumalo. Honorable Tulas.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just two questions. Every CETA talks skills development. We also had this debate about critical skills shortage from ASCISA in an area called CHIPSA. Somebody made reference to that. My question then to all the sitters, do your programs talk to the debates in CHIPSA? And what is the structured relationship between the CETAs? Not just one CETA to be able to go and say, we've spoken to the Deputy President's office, but do all the CETAs relate to, how do they relate to this CHIPSA, which is well structured? How do you, as CETAs, in a structured way, relate to that critical debate? That's one, Chairperson. because you know why I'm asking this question, Chairperson. We seem to be having a lot of parallel things going on. We're not sure who's doing what. The second question is, I see that all the sitters report on the employed versus the unemployed learners. Now, this is what I want to check. When you talk about learners who have been employed, are you talking about people who found permanent jobs, or are you talking about people who just happened because of your programs were placed for a particular period, and you're not sure whether that's permanent employment or what? But my legal experience, when people talk about employment, they've been referring to people who have been placed, and later on, those people, whatever term which was negotiated, ends, and then they are in the limbo. And linked to this question, Chairperson, how marketable are the skills where you are training the people? Is it training for the sake of training that will met these targets? How qualitative are these skills? When people emerge out of these programs, do you have confidence that these people, indeed, they are in the market? The last one, it might sound a bit sensitive, but we must talk about this. Which market do you use when you determine your remuneration policies? There's a private sector market, there's a public sector market. We've heard stories, we're not sure, of people earning salaries more than DGs, but others earning salaries at a director's level. Which market, and I want this answer from each and every seat, which market determines, do you use to determine your salary packages? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nguse. Honorable Shelley. Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is directed to Buffett. In bringing new learners who have just completed their matric from rural areas, what communication tools do you use? Because here you have made mention that the vehicle that you use is websites and call center. And with my knowledge of rural areas, you'll find places where people cannot even access these two communication tools. I want to know what program or do you have to address issues of rural areas to bring in or to communicate to people or to the rural areas in particular. And then to the bank sitter, the question that I have is also linked to the provincial centers of excellence in skills resource centers. To say you have made mention that these are provincial centers and your example was of the Eastern Cape. Maybe it was just the Eastern Cape was just a highlight. Can you give us more information to say why was the Eastern Cape chosen? Was it a pilot project in the Eastern Cape which will be rolled out to other provinces, or it has been rolled out to other provinces? Thanks.
Honorable Polis. Honorable Nyakemba.
Thank you, sir. to clothing and textile. In your financial report, you made mention that the admin expenditure has increased by 10%. I think you need to give details to that as to what caused this increase of 10%. because when you compare the income on the basis of the levies that are paid, then the admin increase is more than the income when you compare 2007, 2008, and 2009 financial year. And I think linked to that is the payment of the chairperson of the audit committee and other members. Can you be a little bit transparent on this? Can you give us some details and reasons why there are certain members that are paid and other members are not paid? The last one, Madam Chair, I think Honorable Tulas spoke to the issue on the issue of placement. Is this placement comes before the training of the unemployed, or it comes after? Can it be a little bit, in fact, this goes to all the sitters. It goes to all the sitters because we might talk about placement. Do you then, as sitters, if there are learners who have been taken by companies in the industries where you operate, are these permanent or just temporary jobs? The very last one, sir. One was hearing is almost same problem in all the sitters. Even if the words were not the same in terms of pronouncing, poor results, poor metric results. What are you doing? What are you doing as sitters to assist that in future you don't complain about poor results? I think I heard, if I'm not mistaken, Madam Chair, is the bank sitter or facet that says they have programs to assist during the to assist that at the end of the day the results, the metric results, they become better. Can you be a little bit specific? How do you assist, and those who are not assisting, what is it that they're thinking of? Thanks.
Honorable Shelley. Thank you. This question goes to the Chita Sita. On your organizational highlight, you made mention that you had a pilot project that was establishing national initiatives of celebrating and recognizing grade 12 math and science achievements. Can you share with us the challenges and achievements of your pilot study in the Northwest, and what measures are in place to roll out the program to all the other 8 provinces, and the time frame that will be taken into account to roll out these programs into the other provinces? Thanks.
We received all the questions from the members. I think we should take a 10-minute break, and immediately after that, we'll go through the answering.
From the FLA that we have, the Department of Labor. We referred in question number 4 related to us was, we referred twice to employed and unemployed learners. Employed learners refer to people who are full-time employed in our sector. when they participate in learnership programs or skills programs. When we refer to unemployed learners, we refer to people who have left school or left university or are currently unemployed. When they join those programs, they are referred to as unemployed learners. And then when they finish those programs, if they are, depending what those programs are, they're normally a year. When they finish those programs, there is no obligation on the employer to employ them. However, we've referred to that our record up to now is 80% employment rate inside our sector. Other people find employment whilst they're doing the programs, the learnership, leave them midway, others get married and all sorts of things. Others do get fired for a lot of infractions and violations. Question five was, how marketable are the training programs and the skills people receive? It is part of the foundation of the whole national skill development, that the skills be first marketable to, transportable to other sectors, and also be credit bearing. So that we would not give training for the sake of training. All the training that we provide to both employed and unemployed is SAQA credit, number one. Number two, in our sector, the people can find employment or can find employment in other sectors as well. The question was all raised in terms of what market do we use for benchmarking salaries. I probably should take longer time to answer this question in that salaries are designed to attract one and retain skills in our sector. To do that, the jobs are graded by an independent group, not ourselves, and the job then gets a number of hay points, and that translates to a market position. Because we attract mostly people from the banks, and we lose people mostly to banks, so our benchmark in our sector is the banking sector. The seventh question was skills resource centers that I made mention that currently we've got three resource centers in the Eastern Cape. The question was, how did we choose the Eastern Cape? We've had others. We've had others in Gauteng. We've had another one in Northwest with the University of Northwest for the training of chartered accountants. The ones in the Eastern Cape, because in terms of our FLA, we're expected to register three centers of excellence over the period of the NSDS. So we went and explained that we because of the problem with the matric results and our inability to find people to get into our learnerships and to become to the university and so forth, we thought let us make a contribution by assisting teachers who teach maths and maths accounts and in those subjects, because those are the required subjects to enter into our sector. We chose the worst performing province, the worst performing district in the worst performing province in terms of matric results in the previous year. That's how the Eastern Cape came about. And what is now called Pondoland, Bizana, whatever you. So we put four million, and the reasons why we chose the Eastern Cape. There was an opportunity. We spoke to three provinces, and the Eastern Cape Department of Education brought a proposal that was, we thought they were ready, and they provided the infrastructure in terms of bricks and mortar. In terms of our agreement, we're not going to build a structure. We're going to work in collaboration with them. And they were willing to transport the teachers, pay for their meals. We were only paying for the tutors to help to improve the quality of the matric passes. So the question says, what are the other sitters doing? There are 23 sitters in the country. Maybe some of them can take this pilot project further. But do we believe this will change the quality of matric results? Chairperson, I do not believe us and the sitters can improve the country's matric results. But I think by doing a project, by assisting teachers, we are making a contribution. Will all those people come into our sector? The answer is we cannot guarantee that. I don't think it is neither desirable nor possible. We believe some of them, yes, may come into our sector. We currently recruit in that area for learnerships and our projects. Placement, what is meant, are these people who are placed in temporary or permanent jobs? The people who are, the placement numbers that we use refer to permanent jobs in our sector. What plans do we have with SASEM with improving matric results? Chairperson, I think everybody now accepts that there is a direct link between education and workplace ability to train. And I think that is something that everybody now realizes. And I believe, though it is not our mandate to improve or be measured in terms of matric results, it's the Department of Education's mandate. That I believe it's something that we should work together. And I think this project proves that it is possible and desirable to do so. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Any more questions from the bank sector? It's just one question. How do you identify the workers or youngsters that you place in the banks? Is there somebody recruiting for you, or the banks alert you that there are these people that you need to assist in terms of payment? How do you get them? And the teachers as well, that you are contributing to their affairs and other things to go and assist the students. Who identifies those teachers? There's one question that I want to ask to all the sitters. Is the use of consultants. Those who are using, how many are they using? For how long have they been using them? For what? And when is the contract ending of those consultants?
Thank you, Chairperson. The question is, how do we recruit people for the SEMA and Kuyasa programs? These are advertised in the media, the newspaper, number one. They are advertised in our website. They are advertised in the Department of Labor centers. The numbers that we get, I mean, these things are 1,000% oversubscribed to the number of people that we can absorb. However, we do take people from all 9 provinces. We make sure that it is not only Gauteng people who get the opportunity to train, because the banks have a footprint throughout the whole country. So that's the first one. The second one is in terms of the teachers for the resource center. The resource centers, the choosing and the selection of teachers is done by the Department of Education. Those are teachers who are teaching those subjects in the grades 10 to 12, and they go through an assessment first. And I can share this because when we started in '66, the master trainers gave them the previous matric paper of math, and only 20% of the teachers passed the paper. So they could assess where the problem was and where they should actually aim. So that really is where it is. The problem is quite serious. I mean, it's not anecdotal material. It is a serious problem that I think the whole country needs to cooperate in working with. The last question was the use of consultants by the bank sector. We use consultants for things that we do not have the capacity to do, which are short-term projects, like if we are going to do a project to train people in banks for niche projects, those are tendered, and we've got an adjudication process to which the successful consultant stroke provider does that. But we do outsource, if that's the question. We do outsource some work that we do not have the depth inside ourselves, like supply chain management, finance work, and IT. The truth is that because you've seen our staff complement, we employ 30 people. So people in those specialized functions would not have a career path inside an organization like ourselves. This is a business model that was that has been discussed by the council and approved, and that's the one we are following. So what is the current contract? Those contracts, all our contracts end in March 2010. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Another speaker?
Thank you very much. It's Cheryl James from FACET. I'm going to respond to the questions in the order in which they were asked. The first question is with regard to programs that talk to GIPSA and ESGISA and the structured way in which the CETA engages with GIPSA and ESGISA. As my colleague Max referred to earlier, there are no formal structures in place for the CETAs to report to or report into the GIPSA process. However, what we do is we place cognizance on the scarce and critical skills that are identified through GIPSA, and those are aligned in the CETA's sector skills plan, which is a document that we update on an annual basis. We also have a number of stakeholders in the FACET sector who have been directly involved with GIPSA initiatives. Two of the big firms in our sector have been involved in business process outsourcing initiatives that have come through GIPSA and future leadership programs and women leadership programs. So there are big role players in our sector who are directly involved with the work that the Deputy President's Office is doing. With regard to the definition of employed and unemployed people, we follow the same definition as all the CETAs, as bank CETAs referred to. 18.1 learners are learners who are in full-time employment when they're given the opportunity to go on to an intervention. Unemployed people are people who are currently looking for work and opportunities in the sector, and as CETAs we are able to give those young people those opportunities. The question is around the sustainability of 18.2 learners or learners who are unemployed when we take them onto the intervention. In the FACET sector, learners who complete a learnership in the FACET sector, we have a 100% placement rate into full-time employment. And that's the nature of the training that young people go through. We all know that there's a huge shortage of accountants, including chartered accountants in South Africa. And those young people, as soon as they are qualified, either remain in our sector because of the high quality and international recognition of the qualifications, or FACET is a feeder sector for the rest of the economy. So a lot of those young people are taken up by banks, by insurance companies, in the government sector, etc., which gives us an opportunity to train a new crop of young people coming through the system. So I think those 100% placement is into full-time permanent employment. On our development projects, we also have over an 80% placement rate, and once again, that would be into full-time employment within the sector. And what we do is we have a process in place where we track individuals for at least 6 months after they've completed the intervention to make sure that they are still employed. The next question was with regard to the market against which FACET benchmark salary packages. The benchmark that we use in the FACET sector is the stakeholders within our sector. So we tend to benchmark against the firms and the professional bodies in our sector because the majority of employees of the FACET sector have tended to come from the firms or from the professional bodies, and a number of FACET people who leave tend to go back into the firms or the professional bodies within the FACET sector. We also do a full job description exercise, and we also do a full benchmarking exercise, and we currently use the Patterson grading scale at FACET. The specific question with regard to FACET's communication tool for rural areas, yes, the main vehicle that FACET uses is the website and the call center because of the nature of our sector, but we use a lot of community-based newspapers, community-based radio stations. We also go into a lot of career guides at school, Rainbow, et cetera, which is disseminated to rural schools. We also work very, very closely with the professional bodies and organizations like ABASA in our sector, which also go out to rural schools to promote the sector as a sector of career choice. And secondly, with NSF funding, the National Skills Fund funding, and working with the Tutuka projects, we've had a footprint in a number of those rural schools where we've implemented programs in the rural schools. And finally, all of our development projects, when they are recruiting for youngsters to come onto those programs, those are national recruitment drives through local newspapers and local radio stations. The poor matric results and how can we influence the poor matric results? I think the member referred to some of the interventions FACET has in place, and we really have a three-legged strategy. The first strategy is, yes, we do get involved at school level. Our Tutuka program, which ran for 4 years, funded by the NSF, was looking at going into schools to uplift maths, accounting, and also teacher upliftment, and that ran in three provinces, in the Eastern Cape, in Limpopo province, and also in KwaZulu-Natal. We also run individual programs at individual schools, like the St. Mary's program that we ran, which is a private school based up in Johannesburg, which linked in with learners from Alex Township to give those learners from those high schools opportunities to do higher grade maths. We also then have bridging programs between school and university. For example, the Schematis program that we work together with Stellenbosch University. And for the first time this year, we've given people who did maths literacy at school an opportunity to convert that into full mathematics so they could get into the BCom route. But I think just as importantly is that if we can't fix the matric results in the short term, we need to look at alternative career paths for young people. And we've got those alternative career paths in the Institute of Certified Bookkeepers, the Association of Accounting Technicians. So young people who want to become full professionally qualified accountants can actually choose an alternative entry route and go via that route to get to their ultimate goal. And then the last question, Chair, was with regard to the use of consultants. FACET also has chosen to use a particular business model when we set FACET up. FACET employs 20 full-time staff members. The business model that we use is that we make sure that we keep core primary functions of the CETA in-house and that support functions are outsourced. The outsourced support functions are contracted till the end of 2010. We also have a number of service providers that we use at FACET, for example, function organizers, et cetera, which are appointed on a tender basis, and those would come through on a demand level. And then with regard to the spend of our discretionary projects, those projects would go out to full tender once a year, and we would engage people who are going to deliver on that particular intervention only with the deliverables associated with that intervention. At this point in time, we have two consultants working at FACET. The one's here on a one-year contract, and the other one is on a nine-month contract, and it's for two vacant positions that we have within the CETA that we didn't believe would be prudent to fill in the short term when we don't have clarity with regard to the CETA's future beyond March 2010. So I hope that answers the questions. Thank you.
Any more questions from FACET? Another CETA, please.
If I may speak, I'm Frans Barnard from the CTFL sector, chairperson. We want to respond in terms of the questions in four different categories. I'll take the first category that deals with the whole question about critical skills shortages and so forth. We have reported that we have structured a program and partnership with GIPSA in terms of our 20 students that are currently overseas in the Czech Republic studying for their master's degree in textile engineering. We also have partnerships with centers of excellence that are particularly focusing on tertiary education within South Africa. And then obviously we have a very good partnership with the Department of Economic Development that assists in terms of various skills priorities from the lower levels right up to management within our particular sector. I think in terms of the placement of our learners, we we have a very good track record of placement of unemployed learners, the 18-2 learners within our sector. And this is particularly to do with the model that we have developed from start of delivering on learnerships and the placement of people. In that we have about 200 accredited providers in South Africa that are companies, that are living paying companies that are offer learnerships for the unemployed, where they effectively integrate the fundamental score and the practical work experience into one learnership. And based on that, we had an 85% placement on a permanent basis. Okay, in terms of collaboration, I've reported on that. We've got JEPSA, we've got all these others. We just had a strat plan meeting last weekend where we've also identified a host of other potential partners that we want to collaborate with in the following year. In terms of our salary structure, that's totally determined internally based on the sector profile. We use the Patterson grading system, and all our senior staff that have been employed has all been from internal. There's nobody employed from outside. And we must probably have the lowest salary package per grade currently in the country. Okay. In terms of the specific question that was addressed to CTFL in terms of why the admin was increased by 10%, I want to give over to Gina Lidl, Chief Financial
Officer. Good afternoon. The main reason for the 10% increase was due to our external audit fees, which totaled a 30% increase. This has placed a huge strain on our admin budget, and going forward, from 2007-08, we had a budget of 490,000, and this has increased to 1.3 million for 2008-09. So it has put a huge burden on our admin expenses, and it's resulted in us having to decrease our budget line item to be able to finance this. Our airfares also increased by 44%. Our head office is based in KZN, and as you know, most of the meetings are on Gauteng that we have to attend. In 2007-08, we also had a few staff vacancies. One of them was middle management, and this was only filled in 2008-09, so that accounted for a higher increase in salaries as opposed to 2007-08. Regarding the question of our audit committee members, these payment structures were approved by our board. We have three independent audit committee members, two of which are chartered accountants, and they are paid 1,050 rand per meeting. And our other member is a BCom, has a BCom qualification, and he's paid 490 rand per meeting. They are independent of our CTFL companies, and that is why we pay them to attend the meetings.
Now, I'm Mr. Nyker, CTFL CETA. In terms of the use of consultants, I can tell you that the CTFL CETA is totally against the consultant culture in terms of the way we utilize their skills within our CETA. The CTFL CETA only uses consultants in two dedicated areas, and that is in terms of the auditing for the mandatory grants and also for the salary payroll. And the reason for that is that we do not have a dedicated HR division within the CETA. We have the view that whenever we hire skills for the CETA or recruit personnel in terms of managers and senior managers, they must we ensure that they come with the requisite skills so that they do not piggyback off consultants. Thank you very much.
Hello, question. If I may ask, you mentioned in your presentation that your own farm, if I heard you correctly, do you own farms? Do you have farms?
Farms?
Mm.
No, we don't. We have nothing to do with farming or farms.
Okay. Then it means I did not hear you correctly.
No. Fine. Thank you very much.
Sending of students abroad, which countries? Do you have students that are in India?
No, we haven't used India because we believe in utilizing the centers of excellence that we believe that will provide the best education in terms of clothing and textile in the world. So we use the best university, which is the Technical University of Liberec in the Czech Republic. And that's why we've got about 22 learners abroad in terms of the program, the MSc program.
The support that you provide to students, what happens when you take them? Who takes them to these places in terms of allowances, accommodation? Do you actually go there and check the conditions of the students, or somebody else does that on your behalf? How are you sure that the students are well catered for in terms of the living conditions and many other things that they need, since they are very far from home?
Yeah, that is a very good question, actually. See, what had happened is that the Technical University of Liberec, they have their own consultant or broker that came across to our country, and they have held high-level discussions with the ambassador, who was stationed at the Czech Republic, and also with the deputy president and also the premier of KZN. So there were some high-level discussions before we got into this project intervention. So initially we had to drop the project proposal, which we did, and we looked at the risk management factors in terms of the recruitment of learners and sending learners abroad. Now, these learners were also recruited by GIPSA, and they had their own project consultants that have investigated, in terms of the conditions that students go abroad and some of the challenges that they would be faced with. But from the sector side itself, yes, we have sent representatives overseas to do investigations whenever learners have complained or whatever the case may be. And we've got a project manager within the CEDA that assists in terms of liaison with students that are overseas and to ensure that they are supported in terms of achieving what they have set out to achieve.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you. I didn't hear you saying anything in relation to placement. Remember, the question about placement was not necessarily directed to FACET and bank sector, CETA law. We said across all the CETAs that have already made presentations. That's one. I think also the second question that I didn't have you on is in relation to what is it that you do, even if it's not your competency as clothing and textile sector, the issue of how the standard of education is improved. Because remember, you are there as sitters to skill the labor force, and that goes hand in hand with the results of schooling in itself. So what is it? In your presentation, you didn't mention anything in relation to that, except your program with GIPSA of sending 22. That's the only thing that is spoken to. Can you say something on those two issues, thanks, Chair?
In terms of the placement of students, I'd just like to refer you back to the Learnership and Technologist Tracer study that, was undertaken in the sector. It was a comprehensive study, and it took into account the placement of more especially what is known as 18-2 learners. 18-1 learners, they're currently employed within the sector, they have permanent jobs. Your 18-2 learners relates to the unemployed learner. In terms of the placement rate for learners, I think we mentioned that we've got an 85% placement rate within companies. It is because of the way the learnership program is linked to the critical and scarce skills of the CETA. There's a huge demand for technical skills, for sewing machinists, for textile operators, etc. within the sector. So the way the learnership programs are designed, it facilitates placement in terms of unemployed learners. There's always a huge demand for them, so therefore they are placed, 85% of them were placed, in terms of the learnership tracer study.
Thank you.
Then the other issue of how we intend improving the standard of education, given the challenges that we faced with the metric learners. We also found that there was a gap, and in terms of the way we recruit matriculants onto our programs, there are huge challenges there. So what companies would normally do, they would put them onto the fundamentals of one of our NQF Level 2 program, which addresses languages and literacy issues together with mathematical literacy. In terms of Mr. Barnett mentioned that last week we did have a strategic planning session meeting, and I think the stakeholders have also agreed because of the huge gaps in terms of the metric results and the students that are recruited in terms of our sector, we have agreed that we would pilot what is known as the new foundational learning certificate within the sector, which will be contextualized to the occupations within the sector. So basically, that's what we do.
Another question. I'm very much interested on this question of students who are sent abroad, mm-hmm. because I have my own experience. Do you have communication with those kids on a monthly basis? Can you, as you are seated there, say that student so-and-so in such a place has these challenges? Or can the families of these students just pick up a phone and talk to you and ask you, how are the kids? Where is so-and-so? What is it? How do you make the follow-up? Because, you know, my experience with this, tell you, my one and the only son was once in this program. He was placed in India. He's and then was placed in a rural factory that had nothing to do with the expertise that he possessed. There was no communication in whatsoever with the department at all. I was able to communicate with him because you can understand that I will have people that side. I can send somebody to go and check. And what about those who are not me or who are not privileged like some of us are to check on their kids? My son did not finish 2 months in that place. I don't want to tell you the conditions, the inhumane conditions that we placed under. I had now and again conversation with the department, traced the person who's responsible, and I found that those kids are left on their own there. Even those reps that you send in those places, they don't care about those kids. And our kids were taken from really, really poor conditions, who, when they get this opportunity, they think that the doors have been opened, only to find out they are put there. And some of them come back, that they didn't come back tonight. There are cases like that. Now, I want you to tell me that your broker or yourself, I'm not interested in your broker. I'm interested in you because it's you who are reporting about this program. Where are these kids? Can you pick up the phone and can you tell us who is where, doing what, the conditions of health, how does that person survive? And I will record what you are saying. Make no mistake, because you are going to be falling under
you're already under the Ministry of Higher Education, and the chairperson there is a very capable person, Marius Fransman. And what you are telling me, I will ask him to go and investigate, and in fact go and visit those places.
I can assure you that sending learners overseas, it's not a very easy task. Obviously, there'll be problems and there'll be challenges. Students require a lot of support in order to ensure that they stay for the duration of the program. Students have lots of issues. You know, immediately when they go overseas, they struggle with the environment. They struggle to acclimatize to the conditions of the university and maybe even to the demands of the program that they have registered for. And therefore, I'll be lying if I were to tell you that all students are very well and they're very happy and they're very enthusiastic and they're faring extremely well. I can tell you academically they are performing. From the results that we have seen from the university, they are doing extremely well. We've got 28 students out there. I can assure you that if there were critical problems and critical issues with the university, we would have stopped the program immediately. Just recently in October, in the beginning of October, we sent a further 8 learners across to the University of Liberec. That was the third time that we have sent learners onto the MSc program at the Technical University of Liberec. I make personal inquiries with the agent, with the education consultant from the Technical University of Liberec, always insisting that the South African students must be taken care of. If they are not taken care of, there are mechanisms in place to ensure that problems and issues are addressed at the Technical University of Liberec. They also, at a point, enjoyed access to the South African Embassy under Ambassador Nomsa Dube. From the monthly reports that we receive from the Technical University of Liberec in terms of the living conditions and the allowances that they receive, I can tell you that nothing was critical that we could not address. We also go out of our way to ensure that the students return to South Africa. When we pay for that return ticket, just in July, the students that were there last year came back into the country to do experiential learning within our companies. The CETA has invested in excess of 3 million rand to ensure that these students come back to South Africa with a qualification. It is also in our interest, in terms of a return of investment, to see that those students qualify and to make a contribution to the clothing and textile industry in South Africa. Like the government or like the labor portfolio, the LPC has concerns, I also have my issues and concerns, but I ensure that these are addressed.
Thank you, dear. Of course, I understand that the cases are not the same. Yeah, thank you very much. Can you go to another speaker? Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, just before I close off, I just want to tell you in terms of the way we address also the challenges for the matric students that enter our sector, you will note that during my presentation I've alluded to the fact that we are not a sector that has huge financial resources. Much of our financial resources are dedicated to the priority education and training needs of the sector in terms of the technical training. Okay? We accept that there are challenges in terms of the recruitment of your matric students, but that is not so much like our focus. Our focus is on our priority skills, critical education skills. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. We will respond to the questions as follows. Governance and Risk Executive, Group Executive will deal with the remuneration issue. The Deputy Chair will deal with unemployment versus employed and placement. The CFO will deal with the issue of consultants. I will deal with the issue of GIPSA alignment, the metric results, and the pilot project that we alluded to in our presentation. Thank you, Chair. Over to you, Deputy Chair.
Chair, the question in terms of employed and unemployed, like the other CETAs, we use the same definitions. Those who are employed are fully employed in our member companies. Those who are unemployed are those involved in experiential or theoretical training. In terms of the placement of the latter category, Some of our member companies use schemes such as fixed-term contracts. They use developmental pools where the trained and successful students enter then into a time in which they can practice the skills in an employed category. I would like just to mention two of our projects. That's the oil, gas, chemical manufacturing, who have had a project for apprentice and the mechanical skills. In phase one, there were 1,000 learners, of whom 700 were placed, and currently we have just over 1,200 learners who are studying in levels 2, 3, and 4, primarily in fitting, but in some other mechanical and electrical skills. Thank you.
Thank you. In terms of the consultancy area, firstly, in terms of the Cheetah board model or the framework on which we work, we believe that we are an example of internal skills that development and capacity building, and therefore we use a very limited outsourcing budget. So we've actually tied our outsourcing budget to about 0.57% of our total budget, and we've actually spent even less than that in actual expenditure terms. In some cases, you know, in areas where there's a subject matter expertise required and the CETA does not have those skills, we then use a model on which we bring in people on short term, and this is only to develop the capacity of our own staff internally. So we use a sort of a mentoring, a coaching approach. So they come in for a short term and they leave, and our people are then trained and capacitated in those areas. So hence we can continuously keep that budget down to an absolute minimum, and that is our focus in Cheetah. We believe we are the example to the sector out there, and we need to show it. Sorry, Matthias just reminded me, thank you. All contracts in Cheetah ended at 31 March 2010, as other CEOs have said.
Madam Chair, just on the remuneration, also in line with how the other colleagues from the other CETAs responded, basically it's based on two pillars, and that is the pillar of benchmarking and also that of job grading. We follow quite an intensive process annually in terms of benchmarking through using various remuneration houses, the 21st Century and Deloitte and Touche, who's got specific benchmarks on general market and also industry-specific markets. And then we also do our own internal benchmarking of public institutions. We link that to a objective job evaluation process. We also use Patterson, but we also use conversions to Paromnes, the A-step plan and the A-guide chart, to make sure that we link the correct complexity of job to the correct salary and remuneration levels. So we're always trying to balance affordability also with labor economical realities out there, and also structuring by way of broad salary ranges from a 25th to a 75th percentile. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of our direct link with TIPSA, yes, indeed, we have a direct link in terms of our OGCM project. It's Oil, Gas, Chemical Manufacturing, that the Deputy Chair alluded to. The current investment on that project is $60 million. And we are assisted by the National Skills Fund there. We are responding to the need for artisans in the country. So far, as mentioned, we have now placed 700 artisans out of 1,000 that entered, and we are currently at level 2, 3, and 4. We will be releasing 1,286 by the end of the financial year. And then that is an initiative, a joint initiative, the tripartite alliance between the NSF, the CETA, the CETA, and the premier oil and gas companies within our sector, and manufacturing companies. And then in terms of the math and science project, I think there are two questions there, the issue of whether we assist in accelerating performance in terms of these critical areas. Yes, indeed, in the two previous financial years, we had a similar project which was run by the South African Agency for Science and Technology Advancement, which is the business unit of the National Research Foundation. And following that project, we did have lessons learned based on the impact, and we were advised by the board to actually begin to zoom into what is really critical from the broad to the narrow. And the narrow thereof is beginning to zoom into the actual individuals who are the trailblazers in methane science. So this project that was piloted in the Northwest is a very new initiative flowing from the bigger one, whereby we acknowledge young people who have received distinction in two subjects. There's one category, methane science, and the second category is only one of the two subjects. And we develop what we call starter packs for those gadgets and little things that may be very expensive for parents to afford. Sometimes we underestimate that. With the starter pack, we had, for instance, scientific calculators. We had memory sticks that have a function, being a scientific institution, of a laser pointer. We had stationery provided. We had a backpack with them. And we also clad them in the dress, the kind of apparel that identifies them as young performers in math and science. As they go to university, they are recognized as cheetah and young scientists. And in that regard, we sort of try that in the Northwest through partnerships. As you know, that you can't just go to a province. You've got to partner with the relevant department, which is education in this case. What are the achievements? I will come to challenges. We started this in January this year. As I've said, it flows from the previous project and lessons learned. What is it that we think are the achievements so far? I think flowing from the previous one is also the issue of exposure to industry and chemical industry role models. Children do not have access to role models. The issue of careers in science and technology, highlighting those to young people to say, these are the careers that are available, and we also link them up, as I said in the previous meeting, with already existing projects. If you look at the Sebenza.net, which was developed by the Cybernetics Discovery Center, where you can click in that website and actually have a role model or an engineer or whoever who can talk to you a two-minute clip which says, I'm so-and-so, I'm trained in this, these are the requirements, and this is what I am. So that's the kind of exposure children have. We link them up. We don't recreate the wheel, reinvent it. We link them up. We have hot links. And then we also have a window of opportunity to qualify for our bursaries, but it's not a given. We have a public advert which they respond to, but with this kind of support, we hope that some of them will benefit from the bursary program. And then also, I think, the issue of provisioning, which I've also mentioned, we tend to underestimate the little things that make children drop out. When a child doesn't have a scientific calculator, they cannot do the job. It may be very small, but these are things that we started doing. Obviously, it was a start, and therefore, we are intending to actually make it better in terms of tracking them to see the kind of support that they need when they're at university. Those who are within the bursary scheme will be supported in that manner. So we are looking at that kind of support. And, of course, those are our little trailblazers and young scientists. We will obviously put them on our Hall of Fame and actually expose them to other youngsters for they themselves to serve as another generation of role models. And, of course, in terms of challenges, I think the biggest challenge there is the issue of partnering with provincial departments. I think it's more political stewardship that is needed there for a common understanding that it is not competition. It is a partnership. We do come across those challenges where sometimes the CETA may be seen as coming too strong in terms of the project. So I think there we found a solution of coming up with memoranda of understanding or memoranda of agreement so that we do not cross lines unnecessarily and be seen as maybe taking over the project in the province. It's unfortunate, but I have to say it. It's lessons learned, and obviously, I think one of the challenges is also, it's a very expensive project, and therefore, the provision catered for. In terms of the rollout, I don't think the rollout is a problem. We've already put it, the board has approved it as a strategic project in the CHITAS. Therefore, it is not a challenge at this current. The challenge is to see it through and make sure that the indicators that we've put for ourselves are really achieved. In terms of the time frame, we put it in our annual business plan, and therefore we will review it annually in terms of impact. And I think the impact is also a challenge because we've got to develop very serious and focused indicators in terms of what are you measuring prior to and beyond the project in terms of baseline and beyond that. So far, I think, I don't know if I've answered all the questions. That's how far we have taken the project. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Madam, are there any questions to the CHITA? None.
Yeah, Chair, not necessarily to CHITA. But I think even in the reports from the bank sector, facet, is it facet or facet? Okay. And there was little from clothing and textile and CHITA itself in relation to the layoff training. Can you speak to that? But I think the bank sector and facet, I know the answer will be there were no job losses as a result of recession. But I think the question I'm raising here is that you might not be affected now as a short term, but in the long term that will affect you as a sector. How do you see yourself contributing in assisting other CHITAS whom the industries that they operate in are affected by recession? Because for me, that is critical. The last one, Chair, for facet or facet, is that, you see, it's for the second time. The first time you were here, there was something with this emblem, and there was no word from the surface to what was that. Again today, there's something else, and we only see cardboard. And then people that we work with are not sure whether they communicated with you. We just see them putting things in where we are seated. What is this? Was this in the budget? Does it reflect in the financial statement that you have reported all this? Because I don't want to be seen getting out of this, carrying this when I'm asked outside. I can't respond. Thank you, sir.
Chair, if I can respond to that. Firstly, I think, member of the committee, you need to be aware that we made sure that the value of the gift is below what you need to put in your gift register. So please feel free that you're not going to get caught there. It is part of our marketing strategy at Facet to try and get the logo and the branding out as much as we can. So we take every opportunity that we have to get that forward. I think the fact that you referred to when you walked down the passage that other members of parliament are asking you who and what it's about, I think to us is getting our marketing message across. So hopefully it will be seen in that spirit. We also limit our gifts to small handouts. We see them in various places, I mean, and some of the funniest places. I'll go to gym to have a workout and come across somebody who's wearing a Facet Project T-shirt. who might not necessarily be directly related to the project, but people are definitely asking. So hopefully it'll be seen in that spirit and taken from there. Thank you.
Sorry, just very quickly, just to report on the training layoff scheme in the CTFL sector. Being one of the most affected sectors in terms of retrenchment, job losses, and financial distress, I could report that the CTFL CETA has committed a sum of 2 million rand for the training layoff scheme, thanks to the also another generous sponsorship from WNR CETA. They have dedicated, they have given the sector a further 20 million rand. So the total financial commitment for the training layoff scheme in the CTFL sector is around 22 million rand. The CTFL CETA has marketed the training layoff scheme widely. We've been to all the various regions in the country. We have undertaken a national roadshow, especially where our companies are concentrated. Thus far, we have had no uptake. I think many of the companies are still at the CCMA facilitation stage. So we are waiting for recommendations from the CCMA to come across to the CETA so we will know the number of workers that will be in the training layoff scheme and the kind of interventions that they would be involved in. But from the CTFL CETA side, we have done everything and more in terms of an operational and an implementation strategy for the sector in terms of the training layoff scheme. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Mercy, do you want to ask any questions before we come to the end of the meeting? Okay. From?
From Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's Witness Makoswana from Perfect. I just wanted to make an addition in terms of the training layoff. Since inception, FACET has took into account in its decision-making the kind of projects that it implement and against the challenges of the economies of scale across all sectors, which impact that we have in FACET. Because our sector is feeded across all sectors, the program that we developed were programs that are taking into account the supply of the skills needs within the financial sector across all sectors. That would be informed also by the question that Cheryl responded on in terms of bad metric results. That as far as since inception, we realize that against the sector skills needs and the NSD targets from NSD 1, that we don't have sufficient pool that is going to meet those needs. We started an intervention that is going to create that pool from metric level, which resulted into the introduction of Tutuka, the other intervention that he made in various institutions. It was to promote and upskill metric results and tuition needs, even the training material that is used to address the anomalies of the fast tricameral system in terms of education and development. So that principle is still maintained. We are having strategic planning meetings every year that took a microscope of those interventions. And also to come into a sense that whatever plan of action that we address within our sector skills plan, we don't have an oversight of that need and an oversight of that challenge within our sector. Thank you.
Thank you, sister. Thank you, Chair. From the chair, following the call for the participation of sitters in the training layoff scheme, the chair board ring-fenced 10 million rand to that effect. And, of course, with the proviso that there will be further provisions based on the take-up and request by companies. At this point, we haven't had any formal application, and I'll just hand over for a soundbite from the group executives to give you so far what came out of the CCMA in terms of the training of skills.
you, Madam Chair. From our side, CHITA operational ready for the training layoff scheme. We've had roadshows across our regions with our stakeholders informing them of the training layoff scheme, and specifically also of the role that the CCMA will play, the role of the CETAS, and also the role of the Department of Labor. In short, latching on to what the CEO is saying is that we're getting weekly reports on the CCMA, and currently it seems unfortunately that the uptake of the training layoff is very slow. I think the last report that we received was about 29 companies, and only four of them, 29 interested companies, and four that submitted formal applications. And of that 29, you're talking about over 3,000 employees affected. So we really hope that employers, and we've stressed that at our roadshows as well, and also organized labor, wherever they are in distress, that they take up these opportunities and make use of it. But from our side, we're ready. Money are ring-fenced, and we're waiting for the formal applications and the routing through the CCMA.
Thank you, Chair. That's all from the CCMA. Any more contributions? It seems as if we have come to the end of our meeting. I just want to express our appreciation for the CETAS to be here with us today, irrespective of other programs, important programs that they had to attend to. The presentations were good, and they were, as this is the learning process is continuous, doesn't stop. The more we meet with you, the more we want to ask more questions, so that we can be cleverer than when we met with you before. You are definitely making a difference in people's lives in terms of your programs, your skills. Nyakemba, ngalio salapa. In terms of your skills and jobs that you are affording to our people, whether they're temporary or permanent. However, we can do more in terms of quality of the products that we are producing. Produce products that will be able to compete with the best in the market. Also, we have realized that some of the weaknesses is for the CETA not to make follow-up to these products that you're producing in terms of people that you're sending in different places. At times, those people are placed and maybe placed for a few months, and after all, you lose them. Or you train them, you don't know what happens to some of them. So those are some of the shortcomings that we have identified. But on the whole, you are in the right track. You need to improve. If you were to be under this department, for the next coming years, I would be saying the use of consultants is not acceptable. I don't care whatever justification that you're putting, because the money that you pump up to these consultants, it's five times more than the money that you would use
when you hunt for the best in the market to do the job that is done by consultants. But it's enough for us to express that there are people who are going to take over. And work with you in future. I want to say thank you for being patient with us. At times you appeared very harsh, unfriendly, but that's the nature of the job, because no matter how friendly you are, if we ask a question, that will give an answer to something that you don't want to talk about. You can't regard us as friendly because you are asking questions that you don't want to answer, but questions that are there. So it's the nature of the work that we're doing. We are different stakeholders. We are all deployed in various fields, but all of us, we are working towards a common goal, and that common goal is to make difference in the lives of the vulnerable.